Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how you doing? How's your life going? Do you need some new revelations? Well, we're going to speak with a man who I call a revelationary. He's full of revelations for us. I love his work. He's a very prolific, productive author who's a wonderful best-selling author, and many of you already know who he is. So I'm going to be happily introducing Mark Nepa. Mark, welcome to Energy. Oh,
thank you. It's great to be with you in a journey like this.
You know, it's amazing to me how you keep finding life and exposing such richness in it every moment, and your books represent that, because like your best-selling book of the Book of Awakening is from every day.
Well, you know, one of the things that has been very, you know, humbling to me is I'm blessed to be prolific, but I think that's because years ago I realized that, you know, I really need to explore and write about what I don't know, not what I know. If I only wrote about what I know, I would have written very little. And you know, and that goes to that the heart of writing is really retrieving and listening.
Retrieving. Your sound is going up and down a little bit.
Retrieving and listening. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me make sure how this shirt maybe got. There we go. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, it's a place where I'm in conversation with life, and I like to talk about the process because it's not just, you know, for me as a writer, it's for everyone. I just happen to write it now. But you know, I'm always listening, and I've been blessed that the way that I've heard for ever since I was a child was that the world and the universe, God, whatever you want to call what's larger than us, has always spoken to me through metaphor.
That word drifted off, so
through metaphor.
Right.
Because I've always seen and heard the world through the patterns. And it's as if I've always been asked, you know, even as a boy, the wind through the trees, what's that like? What's that speaking to? What is it like in our lives? And then just following those insights and questions, and they've led to stories. And I think there's a direct relationship between, you know, I do write very intimately about my own experience. And that's not because I want it necessarily to be about me, but the I is the only lens we have. It's not by accident that I, the capital I and E-Y-E, sound the same, because that's how we take things in. And I've learned that when I can go deep enough into me, honestly, I find you.
And I like that.
Yeah, so you know, the reward for being authentic is not that I'm stuck in myself. I move through myself into the world of all selves. And that's where the stories and the lessons and the revelations reside.
Well, it seems to me, you know, you're driven to share, and you're looking at every way that you can interpret things to enrich others. And I love that, and it's, you know, it's beautiful. And you've gone through a very tough, many tough times in your life. You're a real person. You're not, you know, this, you know, master who's just above everything. You climb into life in its hardships also. And what I was just realizing is that at one point you actually had to have a rib removed. And it was in the throes of cancer and very life-threatening. And yet, you know, you removed your rib to become the feminine seer. So I can call you Adam.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's very much And that journey for me, that's what happened for me. And I always like to emphasize that, you know, everyone will be given an opportunity to drop into the depth of life.
Yes, we're all challenged in the deepest ways, and no one should think that we're more challenged than anyone else. I work with so many people, and some of them have incredible challenges, and some of them don't, but they think they are. And you don't want to tell them, no, your challenge isn't as great as somebody else, because they can't imagine that their challenge isn't the toughest.
Yeah, and I think that also, you know, it isn't always catastrophe or struggle. We all get our share of that. You know, I think human being, it can be also beauty, wonder, love, you know, that just the aura of life itself that opens us. And I talk about cancer because that's what happened to me, but it could have been anything. And I think as human beings, we grow basically in two ways. We either willfully shed or we're broken open. And like X and Y chromosomes, I feel like these are spiritual chromosomes that we'll get our combination of both. And if we don't want to willfully shed, don't worry, we'll be broken open, and then all the mysteries will seep in.
Right. And I want to ask you about how we hold it all together, because there's a teaching that you really like. And I want to just mention an experience I had with my older son. When he got out of college, he graduated with honors, and he came to me for advice. And he said, "Dad, you know, I'm on a roll. I don't want to make any mistakes. I'm doing good. What do you suggest? What direction should I take? Or, you know, how shall I look at this going forward so I can maintain the success that I'm in?" And I said, "Well, to tell you the truth about me, after I graduated from college, for 10 years, all I did was make mistakes. It was a very dark 10 years of my life. And it was really a disappointment to me for those 10 years. But I want you to know, if I had chosen have made any other choices during those 10 years, you wouldn't be here today." And so I want to position that in a teaching that you really like called Not Two But One.
So this comes from Teng San, who was a Chinese philosopher who was pretty much of a curmudgeon, as best we know. And it seems that all of his students, whatever issue or question or conflict his students would bring to him, he'd listen, and he'd have the same answer for all of them. He'd listen and he'd go, "Not two," he'd hold up two fingers. "Go one, go away." "Go figure it out. Not two, one." And yeah, that's very instructive to me, because and has been. In fact, one of my students made up a refrigerator magnet for me with "Not two, one" on it.
Cool.
And but you know, here, whatever in the surface world of circumstance, we do make choices. We go left, we go right. I had to hit a certain button to make this work so we could talk. But what I understand him to be implying, and of course, I didn't talk to him, what do I know? Obviously, this is what it means to me, is that whatever we're faced with, whatever choices, whatever conflicts, whatever issues, we need to go back to the oneness under those choices, which will give us the eyes of oneness, the ears of oneness, and the heart of oneness. And from that perspective, we will make different choices. So whatever it might be, no, not two, one. Uh-huh. Look back to the wholeness first, and then look, and then feel, and then think about a choice.
Right. And then even choice. Then, but see, what I get out of this also is that there's no separation of anything. So those 10 years of my life that were dark.
Absolutely.
Is actually part of the greater whole that's at one.
Well, and a way to understand that is also from, you know, from nature. We all know how a butterfly emerges from a cocoon. Well, when it does that, it doesn't mean the cocoon was false. It means the cocoon served its purpose.
Right.
And so those 10 years were like a cocoon for you. And we all have these that emerged you. And And I think that this gets to a deeper thing about our walk in life. And I've been humbled. I believe that, you know, everyone kind of arrives with an argument with life. Life is unfair. We compare, you know, we do all these things. And that's given to us to work out as an initiation into the art of acceptance. Because I've learned, and I can share a couple of quick stories here that illustrate this, that our greatness lies in how we work with what we're given, not whether we get what we want.
I love that. And I'm starting to write a book about my life.
And, oh, wonderful.
I'm at an age now. I'm a lot older than you, by the way.
Well, you look great.
Thank you. I'm mid-70s, and I'm proud of it. I've had my incredible struggles and stories in life that are fascinating. And it's so rich. But if I look back anywhere you took a snapshot of my life and how you doing, oh my God. You know, it's like, I don't know, this is tough. But looking back on it, I love it all because it was so rich and has so many wonderful, there's so many wonderful stories about it that involve, you know, unfairness, involve being, you know, tricked and trapped and harmed. And yet I've always found my heart and stayed with it and believed in my own purpose. And you teach that. And, you know, that's why I love your writing, because there's so much in it that, and I think everyone does attune to it. That's why people love your book so much, because you go to the heart of everything.
Well, thank you. And I believe that our heart is our greatest teacher. And, you know, a couple of quick stories about the our greatness lying and working with what we're given is, you know, in the 1940s, I believe it was, there was a young man in Massachusetts who was a divinity student who was studying theology, and came down with polio. And of all the responses he could have to having come down with polio, he decided he was going to learn how to dance. Now, everyone had, you know, felt, oh, by this poor guy, you know, we don't really want to burst his bubble. Well, he went on awkwardly and with difficulty to not only to learn how to dance and through that cure himself of polio, he went on to become one of the fathers of modern American dance. This is the story of Ted Shawn. Started Jacob's Pillow and became a teacher of many great dancers of the next generation. Yeah. You know, and what's so instructive there is that studying God didn't heal him, dancing God or embodying God did. And, you know, another great story is of the great jazz master, Django Reinhardt. Now, Django Reinhardt was like a Mozart on the banjo at a very early age. And he was a gypsy. He belonged to a tribe of gypsies. And he was a master at banjo by the time he was 17. And traveling around Europe, and there was this huge tent fire that was horrible, in which he was badly burned. He was only like 18, badly burned, and two of his fingers on his left hand, which was his cord hand, were mangled and frozen. And so out of that, when he woke up, he couldn't play the banjo anymore, and his brother, he didn't say a word, but left a guitar on the foot of his hand, saying...
So he figured out how to do it without those fingers.
Well, what he did was, up until that time, cording was done up and down the fretboard. He was the first one, out of necessity, he devised an entirely new way of jazz cording, which was across, because he couldn't do it with his fingers. He went across, and it's the foundation of modern jazz chord arrangement.
I have a story about a man who came into an exercise class I was teaching in the early 70s. in the West Side Y, a big gym, and he comes in and he only has one leg. He has a prosthesis on. And I said, well, you're welcome to join the class, but for the last 10 minutes of the class, we run around the gym and you have to join us. And he said, well, I don't do that. I have only one leg and I'm just here to do the push-ups and sit-ups and stuff. And I said, no, you know, you're going to have to, even I'll go with you and just you'll lope along. And even if you do half a lap, I'll be satisfied that you tried. But you need to commit to that. And he said, okay. And we got started. And he said, it feels like my leg can handle this. And I can do a little more of it and a little more of it. And he kept coming back again and again for the classes and eventually could run the whole time. And then he said, let's go outdoors. And I went outdoors with him. And he started to really run, you know, with a prosthesis, loping, you know, but not quickly, because nowadays it's a whole different story with modern technology. This is an old fashioned prosthesis. He was an above the knee amputee.
Wow.
And so he built up, and eventually in 1977, he was the first man on with one leg to run a marathon.
Amazing marathon.
He made the front pages of newspapers all around the world. He was invited to the White House. And then he started the Achilles Track Club, which now has chapters in over 100 countries and inspires people to get out there no matter what their disability is.
Well, that's amazing. That's why we need friends.
Yeah, he and I, we're still great friends, and he has wonderful gallows humor. So it's, you know, I always say if I do nothing else in my life, on my tombstone that can say, his name is Dick Trom. Peter got Dick going. So I appreciate that. But that's really for all of us that, you know, we need these inspirations. And I'm so glad that you can, you know, focus on that, on no matter what it is, you can aspire to greatness and find your gifts, and you have no idea what we're capable of. None of us do.
Yeah, and it's very human, I think. You know, I know that gratitude is I believe in gratitude is a great way to meet everything in life. But you know, we're very human, and it is very real. And you know, so often when I'm in the middle of pain or difficulty, it's hard to be grateful in that moment. But not 2-1, to go back to Teng San, you know, I carry under it that, I'm not feeling particularly grateful right now, but I know I will be.
I love that.
And I know I will
be. It's so important when you're in the middle of chaos and the storm, just to remember that there is light.
Yes. And it's interesting. And let me, you know, this brings up, because I feel like the purpose of light is to always fill what seems dark.
Yes.
And so let me read you a short piece from the new book, Things That Join the Sea and the Sky, that's about that. And it's called Every Chance We Get. When you've lost something dear, when you can't stop hurting, and everyone around you is full of light, let the lightness they carry soothe your soul. Even though you don't want to be touched in your grief. And when everyone around you is hurt or lost in their grief or near death, just as you've landed in a small patch of joy, don't feel guilty. Just touch whatever they might touch without judgment, leaving a trail of softness and acceptance. In time, our grief and our softness find each other, the way light fills every crack. We must not resist either, but open before each other and fill each other every chance we get.
That's beautiful. And that reminds me of something you said. In a world that lives like a fist, mercy is not more than waking with your hands open. And so what it is, and you also say that our hearts are in our hands. So that's the touching. And you just talked about the touching. And it's so wonderful to live with our hands open and touching and opening. And you, there was one thing I heard you talk about on a video about Aikido, and that's open hand technique. And I studied with a famous martial artist.
Oh, wow.
Peter Urban. And in the Goju system, which is hard and soft. So the soft is very important, to have hands open and touch and feel energy and sense. And so it's really allowing life to flow through us as open as we can. And Aikido is actually facing challenge by letting the challenge, in a sense, teach itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And you know, D.H. Lawrence has a poem in which he asks the question, you know, what's the greatest self-protection, hiding who you are or being who you are? And of course, it's being who you are. And the word authentic, I learned, comes from the Greek authentes, which means mark of the hand.
Marks, say that sound drifted off.
It means mark of the hands, authentic, the word authentic.
Uh-huh.
And that's really beautiful. So to be authentic is to be embodied. And yes, as you referred to, I learned this from a retired physician, that in the womb, as a body starts to form, the first thing that forms is the heart. And then the very next thing, the arms start to literally grow out of the heart, and they appear like little tiny wings almost at first, and they're known as arm buds. Uh-huh. Arm buds. And so there is a direct connection between our heart and our hands. So it's not by accident that to be authentic is to through the touch in the world, through the mark of our hands, of lifting and caring and carrying, putting down, preparing, you know, the great Jewish ethic, the tikkun olam, which means to repair the world.
To do what?
To repair the world.
Uh-huh.
We are here to repair the world. And implicit in that, of course, is in the first thing we have to do is repair ourselves.
Sure.
There's a great story from a novel of Garcia Marquez, where toward the end of it, he there's a diplomat who's very exhausted and weary, and this little boy comes into his office and is hanging around, and you know, the diplomat, he says it's sweet, but he's really annoying me, I need to work. And so the boy comes over and he finally says, "Well, can I help Daddy? Well, what are you doing?" He said, "Well, there are problems in the world, and I'm trying to help solve them." "Well, can I help?" And he says, "That's very nice, I appreciate it, but really I just need to be left alone." And the kid's still hanging around, so he says, "Well, I really want to help Daddy." And so the diplomat sees it on his desk amidst all his papers, there's an old map of the world. So he takes the map, which appears to have come out of a magazine, he rips it up into little pieces and he puts it all in his son's hands, and he goes, "If you really want to help, you can put the world back together."
Well, your sound drifts off.
He says, "If you really want to help, you can put the world back together."
Yeah.
Well, the boy walks away and he thinks, "Ah, God bless him, you know, at least he's showing interest." And, well, about a half hour later, the boy comes back and the map of the world is taped back together. And he puts the boy on his knee. He says, "How did you do this?" And he turns it over and he says, "Well, it was easy, Daddy. On the back was a picture of a person. When I put the person back together, the world was back together."
Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. So what I love about your work, and this is, it's just so fascinating, is that there's no stone unturned. You know, there's an insight, and I'm about to write a book about the stories of my life, and I'm so inspired because I don't think of myself as a really strong writer. I like to talk, and you're you know, you do both. And so it's having your books, reading your books, it just brings me closer to truth, brings me closer to the small, beautiful things of life that we can hold more dear.
Oh, well, thank you. That's all I could hope for.
Well, that's great. And so I can see that I can do a better job of writing my book because I'm inspired by the details that you find such richness in.
Well, I think that we're asked to, and I think this is, again, whether we write it down or not, I think it's the small things that are the gateway to oneness. And ever since Blake, you know, said we can find eternity in a grain of sand, you know, this has always been the way that when we're still enough, we get 1,000 teachers and 1,000 angels, if you will, that come every day that are asking for us to pay attention. And we're only humans, so we miss them. Hold on 1 second.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry, that was my dog wanting to be with my wife. She's usually very good in here with me. So, you know, so there's 1,000 angels and 1,000 teachers every day, and you being human, we're gonna miss some of them. We're gonna walk by them or walk away. But we don't have to worry because there are teachers everywhere. And that little light on a piece of, even a broken piece of glass in an alley, that if we stop long enough, it touches us, says, wait a minute, what's
And you write poems about it. You expound on it beautifully. And so, so it's such an inspiration. So to get more inspired for those in New York who can come to New York for your workshop at ABC Carpet, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so it'll be April 6th and 7th, a Friday night and an all-day Saturday workshop. And the theme is the One Life, it comes out of my book, The One Life We're Given. It comes out of several of my books. But the theme is loving what you do and what's before you as the gateway to being authentic and more deeply experiencing oneness in all that we do.
And how can they find that?
Well, just go to my website, marknepo.com, right on the homepage, there's lists of my events. You can click the link or go to ABC Carpet and Home, and on their events page, there's a link to register. And it starts at 6:30 on Friday night, and it goes from 10 to 6 on Saturday.
Okay, and I'm expecting to see you there too.
No, that'd be great. That'd be wonderful.
Yes, and this is such a joy talking with you, Mark Nepo. It's magic to me that you do what you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
You are who you are is magic to me also. So thank you very much. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you. And thank you so much for listening.